This is the FitCast. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the FitCast, FitCast episode number 2. This week I'm joined by Keith and John K. Williams. Say hello, guys.
Hi, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Keith, can you give us a little bit of information about yourself?
Sure. My name is Keith Sutomanon. I'm from Jersey City in New Jersey. I currently consider myself a fitness enthusiast. I'm not employed as any type of trainer or fitness guru or anything like that. I'm running a fitness blog called redefinitions.net. If anyone wants to check that out, you guys are more than welcome to leave comments. The comments really keep me motivated to keep writing. And I am going to start studying exercise science and kinesiology next year, so that's about it for me.
Great. Very good. Where are you going to school, Keith?
Currently, I'm going to community college, and I'm looking to transfer to schools like Florida State, Brooklyn College, some of the UC schools. So.
Sounds good. Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, man. We'll post a link for your website up on the fitcast.com. It will be in the show notes this week.
Thank you.
Definitely check that out. How about you, John?
Well, I'm an archaeologist, and somehow I got hooked into nutrition and fitness several years ago. I've been sort of active all my life, but I think it was through the Men's Health Forums is how I got in this community with all the folks that frequent JP Fitness these days. And, you know, I just got really into nutrition, so I started writing about it and wrote a recipe book with John Berardi, Gourmet Nutrition. And that's sort of where I stand.
Very cool.
Nice, nice. Is there a website where people can get a hold of you? Or?
Sure. You can buy Gourmet Nutrition on its own through johnberardi.com. He also has a new sort of all-around nutritional guide, which Gourmet Nutrition is part of, and that's called Precision Nutrition. And you can find that on precisionnutrition.com.
Great. And talking about Gourmet Nutrition a little bit, is there any chance of a sequel to the book?
There is. It's actually in the works, but it's not so much a sequel as it's going to be a new and improved one. And you can be sure that after this new and improved one, there will be a sequel. What we're doing now is, you know, I don't know about you guys, but when I am cooking with a cookbook, an e-book isn't that useful. Sure, mm-hmm. You can print out the recipes, but it's nice to have something on your kitchen counter. So we hired a photographer who cooked every single meal in the book, took these wonderful photographs of it. So we're going to have this nice glossy color photo book, and we're changing around the text. We're updating the text. Some of the sidebars will be updated. So it's just going to be an all-around better book, so you guys can have one on your countertop these days.
Nice.
Very cool.
I look forward to it.
Just a little note about Precision Nutrition. I checked on Berardi's website a little while ago, and it's on sale until April 30th. It's $50 off.
Wow.
For everyone who wants to go check that out.
Yeah, and if you buy the Precision Nutrition kit, you are invited to these forums that JB has, Precision Nutrition forums, and we basically address all the questions from the cookbooks and every other source of information that's included in that package, you know, the CDs and all kinds of ebooks along with that package. So that's a great resource too. I'm pretty active in that forum as well.
Nice, nice. Well, looks like it's about that time to get the show officially started, done with the intros, and let's go into the meat of the stuff this week. Just to let you know, coming up on this week's episode of the FitCast, we're going to start going into the normal format opposed to last week. We're going to start off with some news and articles, just a couple news pieces and articles we got, some from New York Times, some from T-Nation. You get the idea of it. Second part is we're going to be doing a roundtable discussion with the three of us, and that's going to be on body weight workouts, which seem to be getting more and more popular every day. And in relation to that, we're also going to have a one-on-one interview with Craig Ballantyne at the end of the show. So definitely stay tuned for that. In regards to the show, I do have a couple pieces of news about it. First off is our new website. If you're still going to the temp site, you don't want to be there. Go to the official site at www.thefitcast.com. You can get direct downloads of the audio from that site, and you'll also get updated news pretty much every day from me. Also, you can get the show notes from every episode that goes in-depth with links from all the topics that we talked about and pretty much has a little bit of bullets, a little bit of summary of all the discussions that we had. Also, the FitCast is going to be on iTunes in about a week or so. I'm still working on that, so stay tuned to thefitcast.com. Stay tuned on iTunes, and hopefully we'll have that up within a week. So keep a look.
Excellent. That sounds really good, and I'd like to personally thank you, Kevin, for starting this up. I think it's a great idea, and you're the one that actually went through with it, so kudos to you.
No, I just I had a week of time where I had nothing to do, so I was like, oh, what the hell.
Well, we needed someone who was tech-savvy enough to do all this.
I just fumble around. I just trial and error. Keith is actually going to help me out sometime this summer to update the site and probably go a little bit more techy with the FitCast. So look forward to it getting a little bit nicer in the summer area where we're out of college and we have a little bit more time.
So yeah. out of curiosity, what does it take to get a podcast onto the iPod music store? Did you say Podcast Alley or iPod?
On iTunes, yeah.
Oh, iTunes, okay.
Yeah. Excellent. Basically, you have to beat yourself over the head. I've been trying about for a couple of days to get it up. You have to do things like an RSS feed and set up your audio files in a way where iTunes can grab it. They don't really make it that easy, but I pretty much got the hang of it, and it's coming together. I just have to do a couple of things. I'm going to have to update the amount of bandwidth that I'm going to be getting every week, especially because Craig decided that he's going to mention the show and put a link to the show's website on his daily newsletter. So I got to be prepared for the downloads from that. And we've already gotten a great response from everyone out there. And again, I just want to thank everyone for downloading. So it's really coming together. It's taken about a month of time, but it's really coming together.
Super. And if it's on iTunes, then once we get everyone on the forum downloading it, it can certainly go up in the rankings.
Yeah, just tell a friend. Tell a friend and tell them to tell a friend. That's all I ask. And also, I just want to talk about two more things that I've been throwing around with ideas for the show. That's also, if you guys want to talk about topics that are on the forum itself, like maybe we could pick one or two topics to actually talk about in the show every week. It could be from the training section, could be from diet and nutrition, could be from off topic, you know, what the hell. If it's something that's popular and you guys think that we should go more in depth on, that's something we could do. The second idea was chopping up the podcast so it would be more formatted for a CD. That'd be chopping it into five sections. So if you throw it on a CD and you want to listen to it in a car, it's a lot easier to just go from section to section to section. If you want me to do that, let me know. Post on the website, post in the comments for the show notes. Just let me know. Drop me an email, however you can get a hold of me. Also, you can look for me on the boards as well. And also, the third thing we're thinking of is a question of the week. If you guys wanted to do something like that, like maybe what was your best fat loss workout, you could submit maybe a little bit of text on what your favorite workout was, what you got out of it, and why. And we could talk about three or four of the submissions every week. But that's just a couple things I'm throwing around. Again, if you have any questions or comments about any of these, jump to the website, drop me an email, however you get a hold of me. I usually reply within an hour or two, depending on how my schedule is going that day. But that's about it for the FitCast news.
Oh, one other thing, maybe I can bring it up now so I don't interrupt this later, is we were thinking of doing reviews of different protein shakes. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to, I was out in the mountains right before I came here, so I whipped up a super shake when I came in, so I'm drinking one now. And I was at Costco last week and succumbed to their sweet prices for their for their big tubs of protein, and bought a brand called Sport Pharma, low carb whey protein shakes, basically just a mixture of whey concentrate and isolate, vanilla flavored. And you know, I'd have to say I've had better protein shakes in my life. And you know, it tastes okay. I mixed it with some peanut butter and some flax seeds and a little bit of flavoring, but can't say that I'd give it a good review.
No.
So there's my little blip on the Sports Pharma.
Do you know how much
protein
it was?
Powder. I think I paid $22 for this 6-pound tub.
Oh, that's not bad.
So it's definitely a bargain.
Yeah.
If you can flavor it yourself, then why not?
Yeah, guys, definitely let us know what you think about the reviews of the week. That's something we could easily do. And also just do something like us all having a whey protein shake or some kind of shake, and we could do a shake every week, or maybe change it up a little bit and do a bar, because sometimes shakes can get kind of
a little boring.
Yeah, kind of boring.
Boring. And change it to beer occasionally.
Change it to well, not for Keith and I. We're still not for another couple months.
Not legal.
Yeah, not legal not yet.
Not for another couple months.
We could always okay. Record up in Canada, but that's not right. Something I have the budget for right now.
I'm the old guy in this podcast.
But anyways, let's get it going with the news of this week. The first article that we're going to go over this week is an article by Alan Cosgrove called Minimal Time, Maximum Workout. This was found on the T-Nation website. Basically, a little bit about this article is the workouts are for people who can't get to the gym and need to use their home gym setup or have very little time. So he's talking about 15, maybe 20 minutes of time. He has four workouts in the article which focus on chest, back, legs, and also total body complexes, which is more of a metabolic workout, kind of like interval training, than a direct muscle building workout. Also uses the total body complexes as a finisher, kind of like what he calls an ass kicker. And that's, again, like I said, kind of like the high intensity interval training. They're basically just replacement workouts, only if you can't get to the gym that day and say that day was your chest day, you could just jump into your home setup, get your chest day in, or just even if you have to go to the gym, get in and out within 20 minutes or so and be ready to get on with your life. That's pretty much the article, and now we're going to open it up to discussion for it. What did you guys think of the article?
Oh, it's great. Everything from Alan is super in my book. This is good for me also, because since I've gone from teaching at the university to the private sector, I actually am on the clock, you know, 8 to 6 every day. So that's seriously compromised my workouts sometimes, you know, when I'm in a crunch to get a proposal out the door. And I'll be in the gym for 2 hours, you know, by the time I, you know, change in my clothes and go warm up and lift the weights and cool off and take a shower, and it's about a 2-hour ordeal. So a lot of times that prevents me from getting into the gym because I'm thinking, you know, I can't take a 2-hour lunch and I need to get home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously it's common sense. You can shorten the workouts, but this really puts it in a format that's easily usable.
Yeah.
Killer workouts too.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I haven't done any of these workouts. They all look like they would seriously kick the crap out of you. I find it hard as well when you're in school to, you know, between school and work to get to the gym, or even if you're using a home gym, to do get a full workout in. So, I mean, these are good supplementary workouts, obviously not to be used in a routine all by themselves.
Right.
Well, I know actually Craig also has a workout that's similar to this that's just come out onto his website that we're going to actually talk about a little bit later in the episode in the 101 that you guys can check out.
By the way, I've never talked to Alwyn. Is it Alwyn or Alwyn? Everybody, there seems to be a controversy on the forum.
I've heard Alwyn. Alwyn.
I've seen it on Team Nation. He actually spelled it out, the pronunciation, and it seemed like Alwyn. So I'm not sure. Maybe he can get back with us on that sometime.
Yeah, contact.
Or maybe someone can clarify it.
maybe he could be a guest sometime.
Absolutely. Nice. I'd love it. Super. One-on-one, a guest host, whatever you like. All right. Is there anything else you guys wanted to include on that topic?
Does
pretty much straightforward.
I'd like to know if anybody out there could actually pull off this leg workout. Because let me take a look at it. Leg workout. Squats, hold the dumbbells at your side, 24 reps, breaking parallel every rep. Straight to alternating lunges, 12 reps each, leg. Drop the dumbbells, switch to alternating lunge jumps, do 12 reps per leg, and then squat jumps, mm-hmm. 24 reps. I mean, seriously, that's pretty intense.
And under 2 minutes.
Yeah,
under 2 minutes.
He mentioned that.
Oh. So
or even the total body complexes.
Yeah, those look like they would result in booting at the end of the complex as well.
You know, yeah. I did a couple months ago, I did Chad Wardaberry's Get Lead Without Dieting, and it's kind of similar in the sense that it just beats the crap out of you. And this workout, it's set up a little bit differently, but it looks like it kind of give you the same results of just kind of taxing your muscles. And to the point where you just don't want to do anything.
End up in a fetal position.
Yeah, exactly. Alwyn, good job with the workout. I'm probably going to end up using it in the next couple months. It's something that obviously you don't want to do as your standard workout, but if you just got to get in and out in 20 minutes, it's something you should definitely look into. We'll also have links for the article up on thefitcast.com in the show notes if you want to check it out and you can't find it.
By the way, I resisted saying it's exactly what I needed because I think that's Alwyn's pet peeve on the forums when someone posts an article and then first post is, that's exactly what I needed. But it is very appropriate at this time, so thanks.
Yeah, especially during finals for kids in college.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't want to spend too much time in the gym when you have to go home and study. And so, you know, definitely check that out.
Also leads us into the bodyweight workouts that we're going to get into later, something else you might be able to look into. But I think we should about wrap it up for that article and jump into John Berardi's article on the athlete's diet. This article was pretty straightforward, had kind of the information that most people that are into fitness will already know, but it kind of goes over what the athlete's diet is like. And I noticed this especially at the collegiate level, at least at my school, that the kids that are on the varsity teams eat like crap all the time. It's always pizza from the dining commons, hamburgers, french fries. And, I mean, John had it right there. And it's just he offered 7 steps for just changing those dietary habits around for an athlete. And you could see some super improvements right off the bat. And it's just in your diet. He also goes into some things like sleep and how the athlete's diet is just so close to what the North American's average diet is right now. And it's kind of scary how some athletes can get away with it and how maybe genetically gifted they are to be able to get away with stuff like that. I know I personally cannot get away with doing crap like that. And I wish I was one of those people, but what'd you guys get out of the article?
I think it's a great review, I think, of his whole precision nutrition program. Basically, you know, John is obviously ranks high in all of our opinions in terms of his nutritional knowledge, and you know, knowing him personally, he's a great guy. Always has his finger on the pulse of the latest research and nutrition, and he's come up with basically this paradigm which he uses across the board, not only for athletes, but also for everyday average folks just wanting to get a better body composition perform better, whatnot. And it's extremely effective. He's had clients that have seen just wonders from this, not just athletes again, but everybody. Mm-hmm. And I myself, you know, once I started following some of his guidelines, it really worked for me too over the past several years. So I thought it was a good sort of summary and specifically applied to athletes. And I can vouch also for the poor nature of many athletes' diets. Several years ago, I was dating a sprinter, and she was an 800-meter sprinter, and she was incredibly gifted. She could blow me out of the water on sprints. That was actually, I was up in Boston at that time, so I was in your neck of the woods, Kevin. Mm-hmm. Actually, both of you guys are pretty close. So this is before I really got into nutrition, and I would try to keep up with her running just for training, obviously not the races, but she would go out on a Sunday for an 8-mile run, and we would wake up, head out in Cambridge, and run 8 miles before even eating a bite. I was as nutritionally ignorant as she was. And then we'd come back and, you know, eat maybe a bowl of cereal, a couple of rolls, take a nap, you know, eat some pasta for lunch. Mm-hmm. You know, none of this, for some reason, we were scared of protein then. Maybe some peanut butter on wheat bread. Even though it wasn't junk food, it was just lots of sort of empty carbs, no real true vegetables with every meal, mm-hmm. very little fruit, and lots of sort of snacks and sugary snacks and salty snacks, these sorts of things.
Yeah, totally. I can totally agree with Kevin when he said college-level athletes have crappy eating habits. I mean, a lot of times it even carries over to the pros. I saw an interview with Chad Johnson, receiver of the Cincinnati Bengals, who said he eats McDonald's for every meal, that it gives him his, quote, strength to play football. I don't know if he really believes that or anything like that, but the thing I find about JB's articles a lot of the time is that they're somewhat hard to follow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being in school sometimes and things like that, it's hard to eat 6 times a day or 8 times a day, whatever the case may be. But, I mean, he sets up pretty simple guidelines in this article. One thing I did notice about the article was it was very similar to Nutrient Timing, which is a book which has a lot of research based off of JB. It's by Dr. John Ivey and Robert Portman. So anyone listening might want to check that out if you already haven't. But that's about it. I mean, it was full of information from choosing good fats, and, you know, it gives nice tips at the end. So,
right. I think he brought up a really good point in the article, and he was saying that he was interviewed by Canada Time magazine, and the interviewer was asking him, and she had this sort of mindset where she was thinking that all we needed to do is get back to the basics, you know, right? And her basics, quote unquote, were fruit juice and lots of carbohydrates, a little bit of protein, maybe some whole foods, whatnot. And that's not really what he's promoting in here. It's a common sense approach, and it's simple when it's applied, mm-hmm. but it does have a lot of research backing it. Things like post-workout nutrition, which, you know, he's always been a big advocate of. But people still, most, you know, I would say a good 80% of people who go to the gym don't have a clue about proper post-workout nutrition. You know, they might drink a shake, probably not. Some of them might drink a Coke, Gatorade only. You know, it's very important for your body composition goals.
Is it okay if it's Diet Coke, or is that something? Can you mix Diet Coke with whey? Because that wouldn't taste bad.
I've never tried it, but it might explode.
It might be like the vanilla Coke.
Hey, let's next week we're doing Coke and vanilla whey.
I I'll let you guys try that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
you can be the guinea pig.
I also wanted to mention that I'll be doing a review of nutrient timing on redefinitions.net soon after I finish the book. I've only got a couple pages left, so.
Very good.
Awesome.
Check that out.
Check that out, guys. We've pretty much wrapped that one up. I mean, it's pretty simple. Check out the article. It's about 13 pages long, printed out, but it's definitely worth a read if you haven't read any JV stuff. You can also check out his website, just simply johnberardi.com. Again, I'll have a link for that website up on thefitcast.com in the show notes, just like all the links that we're going to be talking about in this show. The next article we got from the New York Times, which has to talk about the low nutrition foods in schools. Basically, the title of it is Bill Strikes at Low Nutrition Foods in Schools. Pretty straightforward. The article goes over things like an amendment to the National School Lunch Act, which some of you might know about if you've looked into some of the politics of this. Also, this isn't going to be just in cafeterias, but also in the school stores, snack bars, vending machines, things like that. Pretty much all the food that's available in school. Also, it goes into talking about a survey by the Agricultural Department and the CDC that found that 17 of the schools that they did they actually did like a research project on, kind of like a case study, and that 17 of the schools that began offering healthier options, 12 of them actually increased their revenue, while only one of them lost marginally, and 4 of them reported staying the same. And the thing that some people bring up about this subject is that it's going to be too expensive to offer more nutritious foods in schools. And that this kind of proves that that's not the case. And I think that's one of the major things that us as Americans have to look into, especially with the huge childhood obesity epidemic that we're seeing right now. It's getting kind of ridiculous. And I'd like to talk to you guys about like the fear for the soda, the snack, and the food industry, because right now they got to be scared shitless about this because of what they're talking about. They're going to lose right. A ton of revenue because of this if they're going to say, take out all the soda, take out the vending machines, see a Hershey's, all that stuff. And also, I want to talk to you guys about the dilemma of the poor nutrition of public schools right now and its effect on the young population with childhood obesity like I just touched on.
Okay.
Good topics.
I think I'll let the nutrition guru go first on this one.
Well, I like the article, and I think it's a good idea. And I personally witnessed a lot of the nonsense that goes on in public and private schools. When I was in grad school, I would do substitute teaching, to make money on the side. And you know, going to junior highs and high schools and you know, the majority of people would have, just like this article says, a plate of French fries and ketchup. Now, you know, I'm not saying that kids aren't going to do this anyway if the schools don't offer it to them, because I remember being in junior high school and eating French fries and ketchup for lunch as well. But it's just a good idea because when it's offered, when it's right there, they're going to eat it. They're going to prefer that, obviously, over something with vegetables and lean protein. It's just comfort food. It just makes sense. I have mixed feelings about their solution. You know, on the one hand, it would be nice to have nutritious foods in the schools, but who defines nutritious?
Exactly.
The government.
Yeah.
Yeah, the government seems to be about a decade behind always on the latest nutrition news. But you can't really do any worse than French fries and one of the things I thought was very appropriate or funny in the article was the current standards are that any sale of food is permitted in the school if they contain at least 5% of the recommended daily allowance of protein and certain vitamins and minerals. Mm-hmm. Standard applies regardless of the product's levels of calories, fat, and added sugars or sodium. Under that approach, French fries, ice cream, candy bars, cookies, chips, snack cakes, and donuts are allowed. So 3% protein. I mean, we obviously need to change those conditions. Some of the things that are not allowed are seltzer, jelly beans, chewing gum, lollipops, cotton candy, and breath mints. Now, I did see, however, they must have broke the rules or it must have been a special occasion. One day I was substitute teaching at a high school. And actually, sorry, it was a junior high school, middle school. And for some reason at lunch, they offered cotton candy. And I had to teach the class right after all of these cotton candy crazed lunatics were roaming the halls. And it was like watching, you know, something out of the Discovery Channel. You know, all of these kids coming in with purple faces and, you know, wired out of their mind. And I was just, you know, trying to calm them down, saying, you're more powerful than the sugar. But who in their right mind, you know, gives middle school kids cotton candy for lunch?
So, yeah,
I've seen the rules broken many times.
Yeah. About the cost issues, I think it's a matter of supply and demand where, I mean, just like with organic foods, if people start buying them more, then obviously the supply is going to go up and, you know, the cost mm-hmm. will drop down. So I think that's something that can be talked about with this. But I agree with John where who decides what exactly is nutritious for these kids to eat. It's also a fact of educating the parents at home. I mean, what kind of dinners do these kids eat? You know, when they go home, do they go home and have McDonald's?
Right.
You know, I work at a child development center, and a lot of times we feed the kids snack at 3 o'clock, and then the parents will come in with McDonald's and give them that right after their snack. And it's like, what's the point of us feeding them snack if you're just going to come and bring them French fries and things like that? So.
I was thinking something similar. You know, when I was in grade school, the cafeteria food was so atrocious that I always brought my lunch no matter what. And my lunch wasn't the healthiest food in the world, maybe peanut butter sandwiches. But at least you get like a little side of carrots. So maybe, you know, they could just make the food so awful, take the French fries out. We didn't have French fries when I was a kid in school. You know, take some of the comfort food out and, you know, kids will start bringing their own lunch, and the onus will be on the parents to actually be responsible enough to give their kids healthy food.
Yeah, I think another thing is that the parents need to be educated about how to feed their children and themselves, for that matter. The obesity rate in adults is climbing as well, so, I mean, it's not just kids.
I know when I was in high school, that's kind of how I hit a nice mark of 205 pounds. I'm not gonna lie, I mean when you go into like the high school lunches, sometimes the kids go back for two lunches. In my case, at my high school, kids would get lunch for $2, and if they wanted seconds, they could pay another dollar and get a double lunch, basically. And that's the equivalent of like 10 chicken nuggets, a lot of French fries, and pretty much some kind of dessert, which you'd be, again, you get double, so you get two of. And that's kind of where I got my ways kind of skewered. But luckily, in that same time, I started learning about nutrition, learning about fitness, and picked up Testosterone Advantage Plan, actually, and started doing things like bringing two sandwiches, like two turkey sandwiches on wheat, and bringing a piece of fruit, maybe an orange, something like that. I mean, just basic things that you can just start doing. And my body changed drastically with just exercise, just running and changing my diet just a little bit. And I think that this whole situation is not as small as some people might think. This is huge. And it starts, again, without going into too much like discussion about it, it's with the government and how they kind of give benefited money towards things like people that are growing corn, and that goes into the high fructose corn syrup discussion and all that crap that's just we don't have time to get into. But I think that it's until it gets cheap enough where people are going to be doing it, people aren't going to be able to do it, if you see what I'm trying to say there.
Yeah, right. I think you also bring up a good point with the activity, is that when I was in high school, a lot of times gym class would be canceled and we would just have to sit there and not, you know, we wouldn't do anything physical for that week. And it's just like, how many kids actually, you know, go out and play ball after school anymore? Or, you know, to me, kids have stopped being kids nowadays, and
they just took recess out of my elementary school. They took it out because the math scores were too low, so they gave them more math time. They took out recess, so kids. No, but I don't get this. Like, this doesn't make sense, the No Child Left Behind, but the kid's stuck in school and he's sitting on his ass and he's not getting any exercise, not to mention now they're cutting down gym time, which is just, it's just 35, 40 minutes of time where they could be running around, and you know when they go home, they're probably going to be throwing on the
TV, playing video games,
playing Nintendo, and I mean, they got to get this exercise somewhere, and if they're not going to be teaching it in the schools where it really should start, what the hell? Maybe you should extend the school days an hour. If you have to do that, keep them there till 3:30 instead of 2:30. Do it. I mean, you got to get these kids in some kind of regimen of exercise, or they're not going to learn it in this sense.
Yeah, I mean, our public school system is infinitely complex in terms of its politics and solutions. But one thing is for sure, and that is, you know, the answer to our poor math skills is not to take away time from the gym to add to math skills. I mean, they spend plenty of time in the class already trying to study math. And anybody who goes to the gym and moves around a little bit knows that they're more productive after getting a good workout, or even just walking or riding a bike. Then, you know, you can do more work in less time that way.
Exactly. I think that has been actually proven. Not sure where I read that. Probably all over the place, but I know that that's definitely been in my reading that, you know, adults and people who exercise are more productive than those who do not when they exercise throughout the day. So,
yeah. Good point. I mean, I think we could kind of talk on this subject for the whole show, but I mean, we must move on unless there's something you guys definitely have to get in.
No, I think I'm good on that topic.
Me too. All right, then we'll head on to our final article this week. Again, it's coming from the New York Times. It's actually an article that John brought to my attention this morning, I believe I got it. And it's about, does eating salmon lower the murder rate? And it's a really, really interesting article, and I think you guys should check it out. Again, I'll have a link for it on the website. But it just has to go into a couple studies that were done. And the hypothesis being that violent aggression is largely a product of poor nutrition. And they go a little bit more in depth, showing the study's correlation between higher intake of omega-3 fatty acids and the lower murder rates. And that has to do with like brain nourishment from not only nutrition, but also psychologically. And a few studies showed similar results. And John, do you want to go a little bit more in depth on it? I know this is an article that you picked out.
Sure. Sure. I mean, it's a fun article, and this is a topic that really interests me in terms of, fatty acids and omega-3 and omega-6 ratios. And actually was turned on to the article through Lou Schuler's web blog, and that's under www.louschuler.com. One of our good friends, he always presents sort of the latest news in fitness and nutrition, and it's a fun article. It's one of the things I noticed about it, though. Basically, they took an older study and elaborated on that study. The older study suggested that perhaps, like you said, that more omega-3s would lead to sort of corrective behavior problems. You know, less violent individuals. That study was criticized, however, because although it showed a correlation, you can never suggest a causal relationship with a simple correlation. So the next study was actually with prison inmates, they studied, let's see, how many inmates. I guess it doesn't matter, but they fed one group of inmates omega-3 fatty acid supplements, the other one a placebo or nothing, and the group with that was supplementing with omega-3 fatty acids had a one-third drop in violent crimes, which is a fascinating study. You know, within the prison population, it's pretty controlled conditions there in that study. So one of the things, you know, it's a fun article and shouldn't be taken too seriously. It does obviously bring into question that nutrition is not the only thing going on here. Obviously, if you bring someone up from an infant and teach them violence, then they're going to be a violent person regardless of what they're eating. But it does sort of show that cognitive health related to nutrition is extremely important. One of the things that they didn't emphasize enough, I think, was it's not just omega-3 fatty acids. You can't just throw a bunch of fish oils at someone and they're going to be, you know, calm and relaxed. It's actually the balance between those omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. And our current Western diet is so infused with omega-6 fatty acids that we have this horrible imbalance of stuff, mayonnaise, you know, any sort of vegetable oil. Even the animals we eat that are farmed are eating corn and other vegetables that they're not meant to eat, and that raises the levels of omega-6 fatty acids in their fatty tissues. That's transported to our bodies when we eat, you know, fatty meats, and it causes a whole host of problems, not just cognitive but also physical, you know, increased inflammation, you know, increased likelihood of getting the metabolic syndrome or diabetes, and increased adipose tissue, increased body fat, and all these nasty things that we see prevalent in today's society can be fixed in large part with our diet, and that includes getting more omega-3 fatty acids from fish, from seafood, as well as some plants like flax seeds as well. So, you know, by eliminating some of the bad fats in your diet and increasing some of the good fats, you know, maybe you won't be a homicidal maniac.
Yeah, hopefully you don't end up like that guy in Michigan who shot his neighbor for going on his lawn.
Hey, it happens.
That guy probably had a big mayonnaise sandwich right before he shot his neighbor. There's probably a correlation.
Do you think Dick Cheney did too, or was that just a mistake? I don't know.
Yeah, Dick's not exactly the epitome of a healthy person. So, yeah, I'm sure he has his fair share of omega-6 fatty acids.
Well, I know it's kind of related, but I've noticed that people that tend to eat the junk food seem to be in bad moods a lot. I don't know if you guys see that, but they're usually always – I don't know if it's just from the spike in their insulin and then just dropping down, or I just I don't know if that's somehow related. But I just thought about when I was reading this article.
I definitely agree. And I think something that can correlate to that is that, I mean, I know when I started eating better and exercising, you just feel better about yourself.
Absolutely.
And better about other people. And so, you know, I think that's one thing that can be said about this.
Certainly.
All right. Is that pretty much going to wrap it up for the news? Coming up next is our roundtable discussion on body weight workouts. First off, body weight workouts are becoming more and more popular. You guys are probably seeing them in magazines like Men's Fitness and Men's Health. Also, we have Craig Ballantyne's body weight workout. Alwyn Cosgrove has one. Way back in the day, I guess it's not that far back, but a couple years ago, there was the famous death by body weight workout. For you guys, I'd like to go over the benefits of what you think are the benefits of body weight workouts. Where do you guys think all these have come from, and do any of you guys do them? I know earlier today I did the one-on-one with Craig that everyone's going to hear later in the show. We actually talked about this whole popularity of the body weight workouts kind of all of a sudden, and he thinks it's just kind of a coincidence, just getting to that time where people want more efficient, quick in and out workout, something they don't have to go to the gym for. And I think he brought up a great point. Some people just don't even want to go to the gym. They just want to work out at home. I'm thinking that it might just be appearance wise. Sometimes the gym's too packed and they don't. I personally hate waiting for a machine. So that might be me. If I have to wait for a station, I automatically get pissed off at whoever's there. But what do you guys think about these? I mean, Is it just kind of like a fad thing, or?
I think they're great. You know, it's always better to lift heavier weights, or in most cases, I should say, you know, compared to a body weight workout. I would rather have weights than not have weights. But a lot of times, you know, you're faced in a situation where you don't have weights, you don't have access to weights, and let's face it, a lot of people aren't going to go to the gym, and if they are going to do a body weight workout out instead of sitting on a couch or instead of Taibo, then that's much preferred.
What about Fitness Made Simple? Is that an option? This is to all the people that I know that talk about John Bastow. He sucks, and I hope he dies.
Bastow? I've only read it, not said it.
I think it's Bastow. I've seen the commercials.
John Basil.
His shiny pecs are very impressive, but
they are. They're shiny.
I thought it was a breast enlargement. Are those real?
I believe so. Oh. From what I heard about the tsunami incident with Mr. Basedow, I believe his pecs saved a big portion of Thailand. So,
wow. Okay, then I take back those comments. I'm sorry, John Basedow. I'm sorry.
You know, a good matchup would be Chuck Norris and John Basedow.
Oh, God.
I think the world would come to an end.
Chuck Norris's total body machines as well don't look like the best equipment.
Oh well,
I've seen some of them on sale for like $1,000, and I'm like, for that much you can get like so many pieces of equipment. But
yeah,
I think we're a little off topic.
Yeah,
now.
I wish I had an off topic button that I could just hit, just letting us know that we're like a red alert sign from Star Trek, where we're just going off topic.
I'd be going crazy right now.
But I
do appreciate these, and especially since I used to do a lot of field work in archaeology overseas, and it would involve, you know, 6 weeks or 2 months or 3 months without access to a gym. And people used to think I was absolutely nuts, because I would go out, you know, in the forest or whatever, just away from the site, and build my own little gym out of boulders and sandbags, and, you know, get a nice limb from a tree where I could do pull
ups. Like a Rocky IV?
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I'd try to do it discreetly, but someone would always find me and they'd think I was just insane. And when you're doing that, it takes a lot of imagination on how do I work my chest, my back, my legs, all with you know, things that with my body or with things that you can pick up like rocks and stones. So I really appreciate the effort put into making an effective body weight workout, and I wish I had access to this back in the days when I was, you know, losing 20 pounds over a summer because I couldn't hit a gym.
Well, the reason why I'm starting to love these bodyweight workouts is I was actually doing Craig's just the last couple of weeks. I've been doing them, just throwing them in instead of interval training. And the reason why I love the bodyweight workouts so much is because I can use it to replace interval training, and it's more fun than jumping on a treadmill or jumping on a bike. And also it helps in muscle recovery if you do them on your off days. And again, we talk about that a little bit more in the one-on-one with Craig. So you can check that out later in the show. But I just been finding that it's really easy to implement them. Sometimes I don't have to go to the gym. I can just do it in my room, like in between homework. And it's something that everyone should check out, whether it's Alwyn's, you can check out on his website that I'll have a link for. There's a couple free ones on T-Nation that you can look at. Also, Craig Ballantyne's that I talked about. If you have this all-access pass, just jump in, get the six-month bodyweight turbulence training workout. It's awesome.
And I highly suggest that all-access pass. I mean, I bought it, and it's been one of the best purchases I've gotten in fitness.
Just at least buy turbulence training, fat loss, or the bass workout, and he'll actually give you a discount on the all-access pass. So give it a look. I'll have the links for his site. Again, on thefitcast.com. I'm going to keep mentioning that just so you don't forget.
One good thing I saw in Alwyn's, it wasn't this article that you had. I can probably get you the link, Kevin. But it was a body weight article by Alwyn about how at his gyms he prefers to use body weight workouts to start up a client.
Mm-hmm.
And that people actually have to earn the right to use weights.
Yeah,
because they don't have either the core strength or flexibility or, you know, the form down for the movements that they need to do to jump under a barbell right away and start, you know, bench pressing, you know, however much they want to bench press. But
Bill Hartman believes in that strongly, too.
Yeah, I totally believe in that, you know, how can you jump under a barbell and start doing stuff if you can't, you know, get down and do 20 push-ups? Mm-hmm. You know?
I mean, it's something that everyone should be doing. If you're not doing it just for some cardio, I mean, it's good to kind of do it on your off days for regenerating your muscles, just keeping the blood flowing to all your muscles. And again, I'm going to bring something that came up during the summit that Bill Hartman talked about, is he's a huge fan of the bodyweight workouts instead of just standard cardio. Because if you think about it, when you're running, you're not using too many muscles in your body. When you do a bodyweight workout, you can almost use all the muscles in your body from top to bottom. And you can get a lot more things working, get the blood flowing to all areas of the body at one time. And it's a much more effective workout than just running or sitting on a bike. And I think it's just something that I probably should have been doing 3 years ago or 4 years ago. But it's something that's really making a lot more sense to me today.
Another good thing about it is that it's very it's very humbling. It's a good ego check for a lot of these guys, myself included in the gym. We like to put a lot of weight on the bars. Mm-hmm. When you take all the weight off and you can't even lift your own body weight up, then, it's a reality check, which I think all of us need every now and then.
I agree. Another thing is it's good for, like we mentioned with Alan's article, it's good for, a college kid during finals or, when you're traveling and things like that. So something to keep in mind. If you can't get to a gym, print out a bodyweight workout and do that.
Alrighty, guys, that should wrap it up for the main portion of the show. Coming up next is a one-on-one with Craig Ballantyne of Turbulence Training fame. So get looking forward to that.
Before we jump into the one-on-one with Craig, I would just like to again say thank you to Keith and John for joining me. I forgot to mention that during the show, so I'm going to mention it right now. Thanks, guys, and here is the one-on-one with Craig.
This week's interview is with Craig Ballantyne. And Craig, should we just get it started?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll start with question one. These questions were brought to you by some listeners of the show and some of the posters from JP Fitness forums. So we'll
Great.
Just get started. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I went to University of McMaster in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. I did an exercise physiology postgraduate degree, so I have a master's of science. And at McMaster, I work quite heavily with the rugby team. We have some players on that team that are on the Canadian national team. That's about the extent of the elite athletes that I work with. And then in 2000, I started writing for Men's Health because I had my original newsletter on CB Athletics that I started in 1999. I sent that to Lou Shuler in 2000. He liked it. It was in line with his philosophy at the time, his changing philosophy on training. So I've been in with those guys pretty well since 2000, jumping back and forth to Men's Fitness. That's where I am right now, writing mostly for them, but also for a Canadian magazine called Maximum Fitness, which I do a main workout for in every one of their issues, which is every other month. So most of my stuff now is in Maximum Fitness and Men's Fitness, and I do have a workout coming out in August of 2006 in Men's Fitness. I think we called it Last Chance for Summer Abs, so that'll be a good one to look forward to. At McMaster, like I said, I did a kinesiology degree first in undergraduate with some very, very good professors there. If someone looks through their exercise physiology textbook, they'll come across a lot of the professors are quoted and they're highly regarded research studies in there. From McMaster. So I had a chance to learn from some really, really smart guys, some guys that have been around for a long time. And, I think the biggest thing for me is that I learned the basics and the foundations in undergraduate kinesiology. And from that, if you know your foundations, and I'll probably talk about this later on, if you know your foundations, then you can take a look at a training method or training exercise and immediately judge whether it's worthwhile or whether it has value or whether it's just a fad or whether it's, time wasted or it's time well spent. And that's, one of the things that I think is missing for most people in the industry right now is that they just don't have the foundations, and therefore their training programs just aren't as good as they could be and contain a lot of stuff that, is irrelevant to the training goals of the people. But after the undergraduate degree, I did a master's degree in exercise physiology. We did some supplementation studies. We published some papers on that, some interesting stuff. We did androstenedione. We did creatine. You can look at my research studies up on PubMed if anybody's interested. And I did a training study to finish my thesis where we looked to see if endurance training robbed normal healthy males of their power after doing a long endurance training study. And the results were kind of mixed. We didn't really come up with anything groundbreaking. So that pretty much sums up my studies, where I went to school, and just a bit of my background right now.
I'm really glad that you could go that in depth on it, and it really gives some of the listeners out there who are actually studying to be athletic trainers or go into some sort of that field, really gives them a grasp of what they're going to be looking at going through college and post-grad. But let's get started with the listener questions. The first question, what were your motivations to become a personal trainer?
Going way, way back in the day, I think around 16, I started lifting weights, started reading lots of magazines, muscle magazines, and I think at that point it was somewhere along the line I must have found an article on strength and conditioning coaches in there, and that's what I wanted to do from about the age of 16. So I went to university with that goal, with the goal specifically of being a strength coach in the NHL. Along the way, I researched and saw that everybody had a CSCS and had a Master's of Science degree. Pretty much almost every single strength coach in the NHL had those two designations. So I continued along that route, and those were my motivations at that time. And along the way, I've worked with some, like I said, some elite athletes, but it hasn't been my bread and butter. And while I have some good friends that are in the NHL strength coach position right now, it's probably not something I'm going to end up doing. Along the way, I got in with Men's Health, and I realized that I really liked the writing and the research and passing along the information. So along the way, the motivations changed to disseminating information on helping people improve their health and fitness and gain muscle mass and get stronger, and basically to help eliminate the garbage and give people the straight goods, because there is a lot of there's a lot of information out there. But the one point that I want to get through to people, and I'll go over this again a couple of times, is that this is not rocket science, and it's a very, very simple thing. We all know what to do. We all know what to eat. We all know that you have to do certain training methods to gain mass. You want to lift heavy weights. You want to eat extra food. If you want to lose body fat, you can't eat as much food, but this is where it gets a little tricky about what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat. But I mean, you also just realize that if you eat whole, healthy, natural foods, then that's the type of stuff that's going to help people lose body fat. So that's the type of information I wanted to get out there. That was my motivation. I was sick of seeing people spinning their wheels and getting nowhere. From family members on through friends, and then it just over time, as I got more educated and I put more of this stuff out into emails to friends, that I just decided, hey, let's package this up and get this stuff out to people in more of a larger market. So I wanted everyone to understand, keep things as simple as possible. And, you know, the three words that would describe my stuff is simplicity, efficiency, and effectiveness. That's another thing, aside from being as simple as possible, in this day and age, most people need it as quick as possible. So my motivations are to get the information out there that's going to help people make changes in their life, and they're just going to see how simple it can be, and easy and time efficient to do it, because a lot of people are intimidated by what they think is going to be radical lifestyle changes and excessive demands on their time to be very healthy and very fit. But it's not, and you know, once you get into the lifestyle, then it's very rewarding for me to see friends and family and clients, you know, make that change, and all of a sudden they wouldn't think of, you know, drinking 2 liters of pop a day, which is one of my best friends used to do that every day. It's kind of funny at the time, but now he is absolutely my golden boy when it comes to being a successful lifestyle transformation. So that type of stuff, once you get somebody to buy into it, to see how easy it is, then it just becomes their lifestyle. And I mean, if we can get a few more people each week on this type of lifestyle, it not only will it improve their health, but I mean, they'll work better, they'll think better, you know, everything's just going to be better. And you know, you can have your pizza once a week and that sort of stuff. And so, again, just being simple, making it efficient, making it effective, and showing people it's not rocket science and it doesn't need to be intimidating.
Yeah, I think that's what's so great about some of your stuff, is it just cuts to the chase, no BS, and it's really just simple, easy to understand, and it's really straightforward. And I think that's, in my view, why some of your material is so successful, and That's just kind of...
Well, thanks. Thank you for that. And when you see my material, it's pretty much bullet point. I mean, I could write chapters with cute little introductions and make a novel out of it, but... I mean, most people don't have time to read the entire book anyways. When they buy a health and fitness book, so let's get right to it. I mean, here are the 10 things you need to do. Here are the 25 nutrition tips you need to follow. Here are the workout guidelines. Do this, 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 and this. I mean, I'll admit it, intermittent training can get a tiny bit confusing if you're new to the superset stuff. But once you understand what's going on, it's step by step. Do this, do this, do this. Do this, rest this long. Eat this and this and this. Avoid this stuff at all costs. Here's something you can have once in a while, and boom, that's your lifestyle. Get it done. 3 sessions a week, 45 minutes a session. Off days, do something you enjoy. I mean, that's one thing that people neglect in their fitness programs is that it doesn't have to be on a machine in a gym somewhere staring at the wall. It can be out in a park. I mean, this time of year, it's raining today, but I mean, out in the park from April through November for people up here in Canada. I mean, do it as much as you can and enjoy a healthy fitness lifestyle. So try and keep people out of the gym as much as possible and just making it, again, as simple as possible.
All right, sounds good. I think we should get going on to the second question, and that is, how would someone put together a long-term training plan, possibly year-long, using the Turbulence Training workout programs? This is assuming an average person who is not very overweight and wants to be strong and lean. And some of the books that this listener has read, they all have structured programs with some sort of periodization. But I have not seen a lot of this mentioning in the Turbulence Training manuals.
Well, that goes back to my simplicity principle. I mean, I'm trying to keep this unnecessary mumbo-jumbo out of my work. And, I mean, periodization is something to peak for a certain event or a mini-season. It's really – there's a lot of people that read fitness and have information overload and are throwing around terms that I don't even use, that I don't find necessary. So, you know, just simplify it. If somebody wants to get strong and lean, you have to take a look at every individual on an individual basis and figure out, well, if they want to get strong and lean, what are they right now? Are they strong? Are they lean? Are they fat? Are they weak? If they're fat and weak, well, it's very simple. You're just going to do a progressive planned workout system from beginner to advanced with off weeks planned in for recovery, and that is periodization. Planned workouts are simply periodization, and that's what the Turbulence Training programs do. I mean, if you're a beginner, you start at the beginning. If you're intermediate, you start in the intermediate, and you progress. Each one is progressively more difficult and more effective. And so you would just take a look at this individual, and if it's strength is the first thing that needs, is the thing that is the biggest weakness, that's what you do. You attack the biggest weakness first, and you just progressively take out all the other weaknesses along the way. But you focus on one thing at a time. But, you know, as far as talking about periodization by manuals and stuff, I just don't think it really needs to have that kind of scientific information in there. I just don't use the phrase because now we're starting to make it sound like rocket science, which again, it's not. You just take a look simply at what's needed. You address what's needed in the program. Next time training program, you know, like I said, change it every 4 weeks. Next time you need to change it again, reevaluate the situation, reevaluate the nutrition, reevaluate the training, reevaluate the results, and then change it. And technically that's periodization. Especially if you have an exact goal of when you want to be strong and lean by, but most people just want to lose body fat and gain muscle that use my system. So, I mean, it's not like they're peaking for Memorial Day. I mean, some people might be, but most people aren't. So just it's planned progressive workouts and, you know, easily able to adapt the Turbulence Training system to anything that you want to do.
Awesome. I think that pretty much covers it. Right now, we're going to go into a couple questions that have to do with our roundtable discussion this week, and that is body weight workouts and body weight training. The first question regarding this is, in body weight training, it seems like in order to achieve a high level of turbulence, one has to use higher reps. Does this contradict the principles in the Turbulence Training for Fat Loss program that one should use moderately heavy weight and with 6 to 8 reps, and in the long run, how should body weight training mix with free rate training?
Okay, so first of all, we're taking a look at, you know, does the body weight training contradict the 6 to 8 reps? technically, yes and no, because body weight training is two things. One, it's obviously strength training, but at the same time, it's also a form of interval cardiovascular conditioning. So if we take a look at interval training and running, running is simply just nothing but the most popular form of body weight training. So we're just substituting in some of the body weight training for the, I mean, you get some turbulence, metabolism boosting effect from interval training, you get the same thing from the body weight training. And then eventually, the body weight training exercises will work up to something that can only be done 6 to 8 times. But it's just a matter of the fact that most of these exercises demand a lot of coordination. So example, you know, it's not until you're advanced at body weight exercises where you can do stuff that's only going to take 6 to 8 reps, such as chin-ups, pull-ups, single-leg squatting, partner-assisted glute ham raises. I mean, there's very few exercises that a really strong person could bodyweight exercises that a really strong person would only be able to do 6 to 8 times. But because they can be used in almost an interval-like manner, then you're still getting your metabolism boosting effect. So it's not the exact same as using heavy weights, but it's still giving a very consistent result in boosting metabolism. And, you know, boosting metabolism is just one of the terms that I use interchangeably with the word turbulence in my manuals. So in the long run, how should the body weight training mix with free weight training? Well, you know, that does depend on the individual goals of the person. But there's two things you can do, especially this is great for women, is alternate between free weight workouts and body weight workouts, because that helps alleviate some of the concern that they're going to add too much body mass, you know, without talking about whether or not they can in the first place. And also you can do hybrid workouts where you start the workout with free weight exercises and then finish with body weight exercises, or you may alternate dumbbell exercises and body weight exercises in a fat loss program. There's all sorts of ways you can use it. It just depends on what the person wants. Body weight exercises, there should be some in everybody's workout, and that should be in the warm up, because of the mobility that you're going to get from body weight exercises. Great way to prepare the body overall for the free weight exercises that you may follow up with. So instead of, you know, doing 5 to 10 minutes or 15 minutes on a bike, someone's much better off to be doing bodyweight squats, forward lunges with a bit of a static hold at the bottom to stretch your hip flexor area, any type of push-up. You know, if you can do kneeling push-ups, incline push-ups if you're a beginner to push-ups. Just getting a better sense of total body coordination with the bodyweight exercises. So that's why they should always be in every workout. And then from there, you just decide, well, where do they fit in my plan? If I'm trying to become the next Ronnie Coleman, there's not going to be a whole lot of body weight exercises in my workout, you know, with the exception of chin-ups and dips if my body weight is enough to give me 6 or 8 reps. So if you're in fat loss mode, though, body weight exercises are going to be sprinkled in all over. You might even be doing only body weight exercises because that fits your lifestyle. You don't have time to go to the gym, or you have no interest in going to the gym. A lot of people have no interest in going to the gym. So body weight exercises can be all over the place. And for athletes, they really should be in there as well for a lot of mobility work. And like I said, they can be sprinkled in all sorts of different ways, whether you alternate between workouts of free weights and body weight, or whether you alternate body weight and free weight exercises within one, or whether you do free weight exercises first, get your strength, absolute strength training done, and then follow it up with body weight relative strength during exercises to finish it off. So that's how you can mix that up.
Craig, would you recommend doing a body weight cardio after a turbulent training weightlifting workout, or would you only recommend doing the body weight workouts on the off days?
No, you can certainly do the body weight interval training workout at the end, right after the weight training. Again, it's going to depend on the entire structure of the workout. But if you did, say you did 4 or 6 weight training exercises, so 2 or 3 supersets, and then you finished with 15 minutes of body weight circuits, or however you structure it, you could do it that way. When you use body weight training in circuits, or when you use it on an off day for recovery, it all comes down to the relative difficulty of the exercise. So a beginner is not going to do single leg squats on the recovery day. They're going to use double leg lying hip extensions. But there's going to be an exercise in there which is recovery level, generally, for most people, with the exception of absolute sedentary obese individuals, or really overweight, or really weak individuals who really wouldn't be able to do any bodyweight training on off days because it'd be real workout. But, you know, you can do bodyweight squats. Almost any average fitness person can do bodyweight squats on their off days and not suffer excess fatigue or soreness. So that would be a type of exercise they would use on recovery day, or they would use that in their interval circuit stuff. So it's just a relative, you know, intensity question, you know, finding the right exercise that fits where you're trying to use it.
That's great. I think we should head on to the next question. Again, it's regarding bodyweight training, and it's kind of a little bit of what you went over earlier in the last question. Bodyweight workouts for muscle building for an experienced lifter, would this be something that you'd recommend? For example, someone who has been lifting for a year or more, has a medium build, and is looking to put on muscle and lean out. I know you talked about this in an email, I think in the previous week, about someone who put on some muscle doing just bodyweight workouts. Is that something you'd recommend for someone?
Well, you just have to look at the individual in each case if the person wants to put on muscle mass with bodyweight exercises. And for certain individuals, it's going to be possible, you know, with their genetic profile, whereas there's other individuals that are going to have a, you know, less genetic chance of gaining muscle mass. So they're probably going to need to use a lot more weighted exercises. But with advanced bodyweight upper body exercises, for sure, like dips, chin-ups, and pull-ups, you cannot add body mass, of course. You'll have to eat more and use the more advanced exercises when possible, like the towel grip versions of pull-ups and chin-ups and bodyweight rows. And single-leg exercises will help add some mass to the lower body. But mostly your chances of gaining mass are with upper body bodyweight exercises. But again, there's some people that are going to respond better, and, you know, people that would be considered, you know, very thin individuals, they're probably going to need to add exercises like squats and bench presses. I mean, nobody should expect to step on stage and win the Mr. Olympia, but and it's not going to be a skinny guy's ticket to mass, but, you know, it will be enough to maintain some muscle or build some muscle in some guys.
That's great. I mean, I really think that it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, especially with you look into squats and all that stuff. And I personally tried some of the bodyweight workouts in the last couple of weeks, and damn, they kill you. And the next day I was sore from bodyweight workouts, especially even in my upper body, and it surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, people can get sore from the new stimulus, and it'll work for a while, but long term, you know, it's only going to really put some mass on a few people, and then the skinnier guy's going to have to go into the weight room.
All right, folks, that will do it for the first part of the interview with Craig Ballantyne. Check back in with the FitCast next week, where we'll go into part two of the interview. In that part, Craig covers more on bodyweight workouts, his hot zone training program, what he thinks about CrossFit, and much more. So check back in next week. In the meantime, if you want to get some more information on Craig and his workouts, you can check out his websites. The first one being cbathletics.com, girlathlete.com, which is spelled differently, grrlathlete.com, which is more fit towards female fitness. Also, turbulencetraining.com, which is where you can find all of his fat loss turbulence training and mass turbulence training and many more of his workouts. Again, all those links will be on the fitcast.com website, so you can check that out. And just look in the show notes for episode 2, all the links will be there as well. That pretty much wraps it up for the second episode of the FitCast. Thank you for downloading, and don't forget to eat well, exercise hard, and live long. Thanks, and we'll see you next time. Again, thanks for downloading this week's episode of the FitCast. I know some of you out there were wondering if there was some way that you could contribute. If you would like to contribute, the best way would be to make a donation through PayPal on the FitCast website. There's a button on the right-hand side, so if you check it out, make a donation, help me out with the cost of the bandwidth, and that's really all I'm going to ask for. I'm not going to ask for anything else. Thanks, guys. Again, I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you next week.